Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me here in studio, Cindy Myers, all the way from the West Coast. I'm so excited you're here. How are you, Cindy?
I'm great, Jen.
Okay, so beananimallistener.com is the website. Animal communication is how you and I were introduced to each other, because you are an engineer in the Navy, a naval engineer. An aerospace engineer? Would that be your, was that your specialty?
I have my degree in aerospace, but I converted to electronics engineering and worked on radars.
So you worked on radars.
And now I am one.
And now you are one. I think that's awesome. Tell the listeners who don't know about your journey how you discovered that your radar went more than just your engineering radar.
I was actually working at the base, and people would come in my office, and they'd have a headache, and I'd have a headache. And I didn't have a headache when they walked in, and I didn't have a headache when they walked out.
Got it.
And or a backache or whatever the emotion or physical issue was, I would suddenly get it, and then it would go away.
So I'd like start, a medical empath almost.
Yeah. And it was a freaked me out.
Yeah, freak me out. So it freaked you out. What did you do about this? Did you just think something was wrong with you? Did you just pop Advil like everybody else does when this probably happens?
Well, I was quite sickly. I'd take a lot of Tylenol. And then when I realized that I was picking something up and it wasn't mine, but I didn't know how to handle it, I just went on a journey. I was afraid to talk to anybody, but I walked into an intuitive, like a mystic store, bookstore. And I just walked up to the person that owned it, I think, and I said, "Can you help me?"
And what'd they say?
And they said, "Yeah, yeah, I can." And I described what I was picking up. And she said, "Do you know what your energy field is? You know, you have your personal space." And I go, "Yeah, it's like arm's length." And she shook her head. She goes, "No." And she walked me outside and she goes, "You see that palm tree across the road on the other side of the park?" And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Your energy's going out further than that."
Wow.
So she said, "Everybody that's walking in and out between that palm tree and here, you're picking up what's going on in their body."
And were you like, make it stop?
Yeah. I said, "How can I control this? Because this is not good."
Yeah.
And so she told me. She trained me how to be able to suck my energy in closer and control it.
What were some of the books that she gave you as tools when you started on this journey?
I didn't get any books from her. Then I became an avid reader.
Got it.
So one of the first ones was with Carolyn Mays and Judith
Anatomy.
Orloff.
Okay, Anatomy of the Spirit and Positive Energy, and also Second Sight, I think.
Second Sight was her first one, her memoir, and I could see some of the same experiences she described. I was going, yeah. So I was able to, I'm not crazy because somebody else has experienced it, and they're actually writing about it, so that's good.
Right.
And then Carolyn May's book just kind of explained things nicely. So I had a language now to describe it to myself.
Right.
That didn't make me feel nuts because I didn't have a language for it.
Or the friend base or a community.
Or I didn't have a friend base because I really wanted to keep my clearance.
At the Navy.
At
yeah,
the Navy.
Of course.
So I didn't want to discuss it.
You didn't want to bring in any psychics to work.
No. I wasn't quite sure.
Healers, any of that.
But it really was, what I didn't realize, that it was very useful because I could read a room. And I dealt with a lot of very difficult people, a lot of egotistical people from Washington, overinflated egos.
Oh, you think?
And so I was able to read them and know how their mind worked and how to get things done.
Right.
Because I knew what they needed to hear.
Yeah.
In order to get my job done. So I was quite successful.
So then you decide to switch gears and tell the listeners how you discovered that not only did you pick up stuff on the two-legged kind, you were working with the four-legged kind. Or even the marine animals.
Yeah. I was actually starting off interested in working with people. I was a supervisor at that time for engineers and I had a staff of people, and we had a lot of issues. So instead of getting an MBA, I used to joke that I needed more of a degree in counseling because everybody would come in and tell me their problems and
at work,
all their issues.
Right. Yeah.
And then I stopped joking about it because I started reading about behavior and how to be more efficient and the personality types. And I went, there's something to this, that if I understood the psychology better. And how to work with people, I'd be more effective than getting an MBA. So I wound up getting a master's degree in counseling.
Got it.
And my boss actually helped pay for it because she saw the value in me learning how more people skills. Gosh, because not too many engineers have people skills.
Right. And so, and you're an introvert, you say. You very much like your alone time. If you're in crowded rooms, it exhausts you. You need a nap afterwards. A lot of people are like this. I mean, you even shared with me that in high school, you wanted to sit at the table with the people who barely spoke English so that you didn't have to exchange pleasantries with people you didn't really like. Or, yeah, you know,
small talk for small us talk. Is like a most painful thing on earth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Almost rather go to the dentist because at least I don't have to talk because everything's in my mouth.
But then, so here you are and you're working as a therapist, and you also told me the story that you thought you were so good at what you were doing as a therapist because people were coming in, they were sharing the stuff, you were making them cry, you were digging deep, going under the hood. And then a mentor of yours told you that maybe not everything needs to be told at once. Tell me that story.
Yeah, it was actually when I first started as a trainee, I was still working on my master's, and we had to start working with clients. So I had to work under a supervisor to monitor us. And in the beginning, we were given clients, and they come in for the first time, and I was all eager to help this person
solve all their problems.
Solve all their problems. Mm-hmm. And they'd come in and start talking, and I could absolutely see everything that was wrong. And I knew exactly what they needed to do to get better, and I tell them. And they'd never call back.
It was overload. It was like a fire hose going.
It was too fast. Mm-hmm. And so she gave me an article on putting the brakes on.
Mm-hmm.
And it talked a lot about, it isn't about me, and it's really about helping, going to where the client was at and what speed they needed to be at, and go slow. Mm-hmm. It's okay to go slow and not rush them to figure out things. They needed time to process.
Right.
And get to know me and trust me. So that was really valuable. And then at the end of the last paper that I wrote for my master's degree was titled, "To Heal or Not to Heal? That is the Question."
Mm.
Because what I had learned was that we can present and hold the container in helping a client to so far, but they have to make that decision how far they really want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be okay with not always helping everybody perfectly.
That's so important. I've seen a lot of people, and I've sat across and interviewed dozens of people such as yourself who have these gifts. And sometimes I see people who might have a clairaudient gift, which means they hear, or clairvoyant, which means they see, but they're not intuitive, because they are not listening to whether or not the client needs to hear what they have to deliver. Sometimes they just want to be right, and their ego takes over, and it's all about just vomiting information and hoping that some of it sticks without thinking about how that information can affect them emotionally and if there's trauma attached to it. And that's why I have such respect for what you do, because it takes intuition to be a healer. Not everyone is a healer. And you have the intuition to know when to go and when to sit back and let them come to you.
And I also negotiate with the guides.
So, with your guides, yeah.
So when a client is going someplace that's pretty, I know, tender and raw,
mm-hmm.
and I'm kind of concerned that it might be too fast, mm-hmm. or too soon, are they ready for it? And I'll ask before I speak. Are you sure this is the right time? Do I say this to mm-hmm. them? Because this is going to be raw for them.
Right.
Are they ready? And I'll ask it a couple times in my mind before I will speak.
Mm-hmm.
And if I keep saying, yes, do it. Okay, I will. But if I get a hesitation, or I may negotiate out of it because mm-hmm. I really don't feel they're ready for it.
Talk to me about what's going on in the brain with somebody who's got a PTSD or trauma, and how you see it unfold, and how you help people try to rewire that negative thought pattern.
Any of the negative emotions have a fear base. So when we talk about fear, we're talking about the fight or flight response system,
mm-hmm.
Which is all reaction. It goes to your unconscious. You don't have time to think.
Right.
So what I like to do is work with the parasympathetic response system, which are the positive emotions. We want to get those going in so we can start triggering the parasympathetic response system, which will help counter what's going on, that adrenaline that's going on with the
with
fight
the
or flight.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get triggered, and I coach people on, well, if it's unconscious, how do I know, right?
Right.
So there's some key words that I coach people on. If you hear yourself saying, I need to do this, I should have done this, I could have done this. So need, could, should are keywords that you're going into your conscious.
Cause fight or flight.
Your fight or flight mm-hmm. response system, and you're going to go on that that hamster wheel because a habit is going to get going and you're not going to do it. If you needed to do something, you would go do it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times I say, I need to go do my taxes, but I didn't do my taxes.
Right.
You know, I'll keep putting it off. I keep procrastinating. If you really needed to do it, why aren't you doing it?
Right.
Because there's a fear thing. There's a trigger going on.
Mm-hmm.
So then to stop that, because I know I'm on a hamster wheel, I'm getting triggered or a client's getting triggered. So first thing to do is breathe.
Mm-hmm. And your breathing technique is what?
I like to do breathing in fours. So I take a deep breath in for four, hold it for a count of four, and release for a count of four.
And then pause count of four.
Yeah, hold mm-hmm. it and pause, and then do it four times. By the fourth time, you're getting a good oxygen flow. Because as soon as you're triggered, your breathing goes really rapid,
mm-hmm.
and everything shuts down. You may notice, if you don't notice, your need could should. You may notice something happening in your body. So my stomach gets really tight. The mm-hmm. hair on the back of my neck may raise or my shoulders get really tight. My heart rate goes up. So I know I'm getting triggered because of a body reaction. So if I any of those things that I notice, then I know I need to start breathing. And then I'll just start picking gratitudes. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with whatever the issue might be.
Right.
I just want to start some gratitude energy because those are very high frequency emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, those are going to be releasing chemicals, good chemicals into my body that are going to counter those the flight response system.
But how about needing to feel to heal? Like there's that thought process. Now, not talking about dwelling, but honoring that there was a sad path and it was awful and you're okay to feel sad about it. But now let's go ahead and bring in some gratitude and raise the vibration.
Are you
in that belief system that you should feel it? And
oh, yes,
and heal
absolutely.
It? Okay.
So all emotions, even the negative emotions, are there for a purpose. What we humans tend to do is dwell on them. Mm-hmm. And not use them for their purpose. We use them now as they become a habit. When we use them for what they're appropriate for, then it's absolutely important and appropriate to grieve. It's absolutely important to be angry at times.
Yeah.
They're important catalysts to do things, but we can get stuck in them, and that's when the habit happens, the negative habit, the mm-hmm. behavior. So when you get into that hamster loop where you just can't get off the wheel,
mm-hmm.
then you want to do the breathing, you want to do the gratitudes, and then I use the phrase, what would it take?
What would it take to get this started? What would it take to do my taxes? What would it take?
What would be the first step?
Mm-hmm.
And I can take out my receipts and start organizing them. Mm-hmm. You know, I come in with an action step. Mm-hmm. So now I can do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I start doing it.
Right.
Because I have enough. Now I'm going into my thinking brain. When you go into your fight or flight response system, you're not in your thinking brain. You're in your reactionary brain.
You're in panic.
When you can get into your breathing and into the gratitudes, now you can access your thinking brain and you can come up with action steps.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start doing it. And I don't like necessarily focusing on all the past stuff. I will stop clients from rehashing a story. They can tell it to me once. I will remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you start telling me over and over, it's like you're just putting those chemicals right back in your body. I just released them. I don't want to keep releasing the same old thing.
All right. I want all of our listeners to think about that for a second. How many stories do you tell that you hold as a badge, as your identity? And I'm talking not the good ones where you saved everybody or got an A on the test. We're talking about those wounds from your family, from your parents, from that embarrassing moment in high school, from when you were dumped by the guy, from when you had an issue with your children. Whatever it is, those stories that you might think are, you know, badges of honor or things that made you who you are, yes, they did make you who you are, and they are a part of your past to make up your present. But the more you go there, like I had a friend who always used to lead with the story of how she, you know, got pregnant too young and had a child too young, and it was like, how do you think that child feels every time she would start a conversation with that story? That poor child would feel like they were a mistake or an accident. And so, and then Carolyn Mace told a story of a wonderful healer who the Native American culture believes that you tell the story three times, and then after the third time you're done and you release it for the healing, because the fourth time it starts to take over and it gets into you and makes you sick. So when you help somebody to release those trapped emotions, now we're going to talk about animals in a second, but I'm fascinated by how you help us two-leggers, because I watched you do this at our event up in the Well North Shore last night. When you're helping people release a chronic pain, you're seeing sort of certain things. Talk to me about what's going on for you. Is it a clairvoyant thing where you're seeing, a clairsentient, where you're sensing, a claircognizant, a knowing, or what's happening for you?
Yes.
I knew it. All the above.
It depends. Yeah. Uh-huh. Sometimes I'll see, it's rare that I see things. Mm-hmm. Mostly I feel things in my body because I'm an empath. So I'm a physical and emotional empath. So I feel both physical stuff and emotions.
Okay.
And then I get a sense of knowing. Mm-hmm. Quite often in my interpretation for a radar, if I go back to my radars, we transmit and receive. But the most important piece, if you're going to work with your intuition, is the processor piece, which is our ability to then interpret what we're getting, what we're receiving out. And so I've worked a lot with the processor piece, and that was actually what I designed or worked in the design of with one of the radars, was the processor of modifying a processor for a radar. So it's very complex. That's the complex part, is it's trying to create, it's interpreting, it's creating that intuition to English.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And so I will... A whole lot of things are happening all at once. And it's constantly growing. My dictionary is constantly filling up with different ways. With an animal, it might be... my weakest sense is smell.
Mm.
Smell and taste. But what is an animal's strongest one is usually scent. So sometimes they will send me a scent, but if I have to try and identify what that scent is, it might be a challenge.
So you sent me an email one morning that my dog, my rescue dog, Luna, reached out to you, confused, because things were different, and something smelled different. And I hadn't told Cindy, but I had moved. And so the dog was wondering, are we going back to the other place, or like, what's the deal? So she reached out to you. You guys now have a radar connection, and that's how it works for you. Once you tap into an animal to help them with an issue, you then can find each other on the grid.
Well, it's not all that often, but occasionally.
Occasionally they come to you.
they like to do it right, usually about when I'm waking up in the morning or sometimes middle of night. And then in the shower.
That's funny.
They like to reach out to me in the shower. So really,
when's the first time you knew that you could hear the animal and that they could hear you?
The first time was with my dog, Rusty. And I just picked up a book on an animal communicator telling her stories of her experiences with her animals or different animals. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wouldn't that be cool? I'd like to try that. So I went home and tried it with my dog, and by gosh, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just thought it was just because we were so bonded and close that it was just with him.
How did you know it worked? Did you say, and what happened?
With him? Mm-hmm. I just thought something to him about a toy or something, and he went and got it. And then another time, one of his issues, he was a rescue dog. He loved car rides. He just adored car rides. But he would get anxious because if he didn't know the route, he knew the routes to the different places. So if we went into a totally new route, he'd get really scared because he'd been in a car and get dropped off. And that was it. He was no longer in that home. So I knew he was anxious, and I didn't know how to help him, and it would drive me crazy because he would sit in the back seat and whine and cry and pace and pant, and I knew he was petrified.
Mm-hmm.
So after I learned that, I could maybe think to him, so I just think to him what we were doing.
Right.
I would tell him, it's okay, we're going on this outing, I'm going to do this errand, you're going to stay in the car, your job is to stay in the car, I'm going to come back, and then we're going home.
Mm-hmm.
You just can chill, relax, because everything's cool.
Right.
He laid down. He stopped crying.
Perfect.
For the first time.
Wow.
Going to a new place.
Excellent.
So anytime he got nervous, I would just repeat, this is
those
all we're
thoughts.
Doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. And he said, you're my forever dog, buddy. You're not going anywhere. So just relax. And
tell that, everybody out there listening, if you have a rescue, think to your dog. You are with your forever home. You're not going to another home. You're with us. Because that's important. A lot of those rescue dogs wonder, how long is this going to last? Especially if they were in foster homes before they were in yours, correct?
Right, right. If they started in a home, a lot of them are in multiple homes.
Right.
Or they can go to a home, a shelter, and then a foster home. So they've got three homes, maybe four homes before they land in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just expecting to get, at some time, get pulled away. So they don't have that full trust.
Right.
That this is, I'm here forever, because that hasn't been their experience so far. So why would they believe that?
Right.
So you're thinking it to them. If you just be honest, if you're not sure, don't tell them that. But and I won't until I have a commitment by the person.
Right.
That this is their forever home. Then I'll tell it to them, and they notice immediately.
Right.
That there's a shift in their energy.
You today worked with a dog that they were hoping to get your help with getting them on a walk calmly, because you helped my dog so much with her jumping at other dogs and bunnies and everything else. But this dog needed some energy work, just pure energy work. How many animals, and explain what happened today. There's this technique called T-touching, which is basically a very light touch in certain places and pulse points on the body of the dog or the cat or whatever needs the assistance. But what does that do to a dog that needs calming? How does it work?
It's triggering the parasympathetic response system, just like what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. It's a lighter touch. It's moving the cells. I'm not certified in T-touch.
Right.
But I just have...
You're guided.
I've taken a class in it, and I just love the modality. I refer a lot of people to practitioners so they can learn more on it, because I've just seen it work tremendously on my own dogs that are fearful of fireworks and stuff.
Right.
I like having every tool I can.
Absolutely.
And so I try different modalities myself, and I may use one piece of one modality, mm-hmm, and another one. I'll use whatever tool I need to help whatever animal needs help.
The letter T and touch. Go ahead and Google that. You can find YouTube videos.
Yeah, Linda Tellington-Jones is the founder of it, mm-hmm, and she's an amazing, amazing lady.
And why did she discover this? How did she discover this?
I don't know her whole story, but yeah. No, she's a studier. I think she just turned 80, mm-hmm, and she started with horses.
That's it.
And she's a horse expert, and... Mm-hmm. And Feldenkrais and, mm-hmm, adapted it. But, she's one of the most learned and most read humans I've ever seen. So she's a big studier and wonderful sharer of, mm-hmm, of her knowledge.
You have 24 alpacas, some cats, some dogs. You are an animal lover. And yet you also have this gift with humans and helping them to release. So it's working with both. And I want listeners out there to know that if you do contact Cindy, if you go to beananimallistener.com, there's the sessions for animals, and then there's also sessions for humans. Because you kind of know that sometimes when you're working with an animal, you can sense that some of it is coming from the stress from the human. We were talking about this last night at the event, that if somebody is walking their dog and they see another dog coming and they panic, my dog's going to freak out. That is like you're charging that worry right into your animal, because the dog is picking up on your energy just from you holding the leash.
Right. Your leash, like to tell people, your leash is a two-way communication device. Mm-hmm. You can hear what's going on with your animal. If you're listening, you can hear it in your hand, what's going on in your animal. You can feel them calm. You can feel them stress. Mm-hmm. And that, if you're tuned into your animal as you're walking, which I would hope people would be, but I know we tend to let our mind go off. But if you can take the time and really be present with it, it's really magical, because you can feel the relaxation as you're walking. And if you feel the tension, like, oh, no, I see a dog, so their muscle tenses, it's going to go right in the leash. Mm-hmm. You can then immediately do a correction, so you can stop something before it happens. And that's what I think you were seeing a lot with Luna, mm-hmm, by just changing the halter and being able to feel things much quicker. If you wait until they're, 6 feet away and using the whole leash, or if you're using one of those retractables, forget it.
Yeah.
They're too far gone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same when I'm working with my alpacas. I wanna feel things in my hand before.
Mm-hmm.
When I halter train my alpacas, I don't look at their heads. I look at their feet.
Mm.
Because their feet, and it's true with your dogs or anybody, their feet are going to tell you what direction they're going in.
Mm. Will you tell the story about the seal for our listeners?
Sure. You like that story.
I do, because I think everybody out there listening has a soft spot for a baby seal. And so this one, when one was in distress and we all freak out about that thought, this has a nice happy ending. So go ahead.
Rusty, my Australian Shepherd, and I, we love to take a jog and walk on the beach. And it was a day after a really big storm had hit the ocean, and the sand was way up over the sidewalk. It was the mess, and driftwood all over the place. It was a mess, and we came across this baby seal, and there was yellow caution tape around him, and a marine biologist was present. And he was telling people as we walked by, because we were all, oh no, that poor baby seal. Because he was crying. I mean, you could tell there was this mournful cry coming out of this baby seal. Mm-hmm. And he was reassuring everybody that came by that the seal baby, the pup is okay. His mom is out fishing. She's going to be back around 4 or 5. Because that's what they do. They go out and fish like crazy so they can get enough food and then help feed the baby. And the baby's exhausted after surviving the storm out in the water. And so she put him up really high so he'd be protected, and that she just wanted him to rest while she fished. So, but this poor baby didn't know what was going on. So I looked at Rusty and I said, we need to try communicating to this seal. So I thought to him, the seal, exactly what the marine biologist told us what was going on. So I just thought to him that, you know, you're safe. That nobody's going to hurt you.
Mommy just went fishing.
Mommy will be back, yeah, you know, before dark. Uh-huh. And you're safe. You're tired. You need to rest before right. you go back out in the ocean. And as I was telling it's safe to rest, his eyes got very heavy and he fell sound asleep.
See, just wanted to know.
He just needed to know that he was safe.
And the thoughts of going into an animal versus saying the words is because they don't understand all the words. So it's sort of like, mum, 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 food. I mean, they're not hearing.
Squirrel.
Yeah, squirrel. Exactly.
They know a couple words.
Yeah.
You know, your dogs have a vocabulary. Depending on the breed, you can have 25, 50, 100 word vocabulary, but it's limited. Mm-hmm. So it's once he hears one word, then it's trying to listen for another word that it might recognize, but he's not picking up anything else because he's concentrating too hard looking for another word. Mm-hmm. But if you think it to it, then he's seeing your pictures or whatever you're thinking to it, the emotions, and they understand that because that's language they use all the time.
Right.
So they don't have to interpret anything.
Right. So when people are leaving town and they're going out of town for a couple of days and they have animals that have anxiety about that, they should look into their animal's eyes and think to them, I'm going to be gone for 3 nights sleep, correct?
Yeah, I like to use night times. Yeah, you can
three nighttime
sunrises.
Sleeps.
I like to use an event type of an event experience because they don't. If you say two sleeps, a dog will nap 20 times in a day. So you know,
they'll expect you back nap, by breakfast.
Yeah, after your jog, you should be home.
Right. Yeah.
So if you're going to be gone for 2 nights, you know, weekend something like that, then you say I'm going to be gone 2 nighttime sleeps.
Okay.
And then I'll be home to you.
Because they do panic that if they
get anxious. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And you see that a lot in your work.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
And Cindy is available to be on retainer if somebody ever wants her to do that. That's kind of neat.
I do. I have a number of clients.
Yes.
And anytime they go out of town, it's here's the dates.
That's right. She doesn't have to be present to make an impact.
Yeah,
she
I'm a virtual pet sitter.
That's so cool. But you're also helping humans too. So thank you for all the work that you do. BeAnAnimalListener.com is how you get a hold of Cindy and get her webinars. She does these free webinars that are extremely helpful. She might be coming to a city near you teaching some of these skills to communicate with animals and also to help yourself to release these trapped emotions that get stuck in our bodies and that cause us to feel pain, both emotional and physical. And you can learn more about a lot of these conversations at my website, jenweigel.com, JenWeigel.com. Cindy, thanks for doing all that you do.
Oh, thanks, Jen.
We'll see you all next time. Stay spiritual, damn it.